Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
And I'm Bob Breitel. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
Okay, the comics we're discussing in this episode originally came out on September 10th, 2008. This was a bigger than average week for me, although the size of week is becoming, I think, all too common. I got 40 comics.
I got only 37 comics. And when I say only 37 comics, I mean I got only 37 comics, nothing else. I got this little tiny box. I think it's the smallest box I've ever gotten from DCBS. I'm like, what is this? It looked like a little tiny box. There were some comics in it.
Yeah, yeah.
There were no trades, no hardcovers, no toys, no statues. I don't think that's ever happened before. I don't remember ever seeing a box that was kind of what a normal person's box must look like.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, even though this was a bigger than statistically average week for me or whatever, it was also one of the smaller boxes because, again, there was no previews, there was no oversized book or trade or anything to beef it up. So it was one of the smaller boxes I've gotten too. But man, it was just, another 40 comics this week, and I'm still behind on my reading. Now, what I've started to do with my weekly list, just because I was curious, is I've started to kind of see how it breaks out by publisher, and nearly half my stuff this week was Marvel. I mean, it was shocking how many Marvel books came out. And about a quarter were DC, and then everything else is split between the different publishers. But I thought that was just kind of interesting. I'm trying to think if there was anything. Actually, there was one thing I wanted to talk about real quick before we get started. And that was one of the comics I read that came out, I think, not last week, but 2 weeks ago. It came out on the 27th. I read that first issue of Family Dynamic from DC. It came out under the Johnny DC imprint and loved it. I think they made a horrible mistake by putting it under that imprint. They should have just done it straight as part of the DCU. It didn't seem kind of kiddified, if you will. And I think by putting it under that imprint, it really potentially cut the sales. And of course, as a result, they've cut it from 6 issues to 3. And I'm really disappointed with that.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like had essentially been canceled mid-miniseries.
Yeah, I mean, they made the decision to cut it in half before the first issue came out. It was kind of, you know, it didn't matter what the readers thought. It's like, that sucks. Did you get it and did you read it?
I didn't get it.
Okay.
I don't buy stuff out of Johnny DC as a rule. I find that I have not yet gotten something from Johnny DC that I was that big of a fan in, but then again, I'm not the target audience, so I agree with you putting it in Johnny DC limited its audience because I skipped it.
Yeah, I only got it because the cover looked really cool. Otherwise, if the cover hadn't caught my eye, I would have skipped it. But again, this really, you know, exceeded my expectations, which admittedly were low. And that's one that, I think they botched the marketing on, and it's cost them the series.
Unfortunately, botched marketing and DC kind of go together lately.
I know. Really disappointed with that, too.
It's just, you know, they do some really good stuff, and they just don't seem particularly capable of advertising it properly.
Well, I mean, marketing comics, I think, is a lost art. Because it used to be that they could do everything from a decent blurb to decent house ads. And I mean, not just DC, but Marvel and all the other companies could do all this. Get you interested in the story without spoiling the story, without, you know, misleading or whatever. But over the last decade or two, that's really kind of gone away. And now it's, and part of that's the decompressed storylines that go over 6 issues versus, you know, here's an issue which, you know, Batman fights whoever. You know, now you got to have that same description for 6 issues and, well, it gets kind of boring, you know?
Well, I think that DC also goes under the noble, I guess, assumption that they don't want to spoil things. So information-wise, less is more, and they do all these cryptic things that are supposed to intrigue people into picking it up, and I don't think it is. I think it's more just like, I have no idea what that is, so there's so much other entertainment out there. I'm not going to take a chance on something that I don't know what it is. I think that there may have been a time and a place for that kind of marketing, and I don't think that that time and place is where the comics industry is today.
I would agree with that. We've got too much cynicism, too many people looking for reasons not to get something than to get something. And part of that's the economy. I mean, money's tight for a lot of people. And you, that kind of cryptic stuff, if you've got to decipher what it's trying to sell you or whatever, it's just not going to work. Now, along those lines, one of the things I noticed in the DC book we're going to talk about in a few minutes was the house ads for Wildstorm and the whole This Is Wildstorm campaign that they're apparently starting in the house ads.
Mm-hmm.
And what really floored me with that is the first two I noticed were for World of Warcraft and X-Files. And literally it's saying, This Is Wildstorm. And I'm like, wow, I remember when Wildstorm used to have its own properties.
Yeah, well, that's why I pretty much don't buy anything from Wildstorm anymore. I mean, I'm still getting Ex Machina and things like that, but all the licensed properties and stuff. I historically, and maybe this is different with different people, but, and I can see where tried and true properties like the X-Files or World of Warcraft for people who play the World of Warcraft game. I mean, that would be intriguing. I have always found licensed properties in comics to be somewhat short of the mark for me personally. I really just don't like most licensed things that I've ever gotten a hold of in comics form. I just like the pure form that it was originally in, and there's so many other comics that maybe back in the, what was it, the 80s, I guess, when the Star Wars comic came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was an exception, the Marvel Star Wars comic, because there was no such thing as DVDs. I mean, there were barely videotapes back then, you know, and it's, you know, if you wanted more adventures, you'd go to the comic for it. But now you have video games and you can pick up the movie and rewatch it anytime you want. You know, I just personally, the comics adaptions of these things just don't do it for me, but, you know, that's just me.
I tend to be on the other end of the spectrum. In a lot of cases, they do work for me. And in many cases, they don't. But, you know, I'm enjoying some of the Star Trek stuff, some of the Star Wars stuff, the Doctor Who. I mean, I'm getting a decent amount of licensed properties. But I can see where they would fall shy of the mark, particularly compared against, well, I can just watch the DVD.
Right.
You know, I totally understand that. Well, shall we dive into that DC book?
Ex Machina, and it's a Wildstorm book, which is probably why you were assailing yourself with Wildstorm house ads.
Uh-huh.
You're reading Ex Machina, which I will continue reading, even though it's a Wildstorm book, even though it's one of the few Wildstorm books I read.
Yeah, and it's issue 38 we're talking about. They seem to have redone the cover design slightly to put the creative team up on the top banner, which I think is a smart move. I like that. Overall, really enjoy this series. I find it to be a very consistent, reliable read. In other words, it's very level in quality. If you like one issue, you're going to like the series. And while I liked this issue, it was kind of a second part of a story kind of a deal. And I don't know, it left me thinking that we kind of sort of came in the middle a little and left in the middle a little, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And it was not, actually, it was the third chapter. It wasn't unsatisfying in that respect, but for me, anytime I get a chapter of a story versus something where I feel I'm getting a full story in some respect, which granted is incredibly rare these days, it takes a little away from me. This is probably one of the smarter written books out there. It's certainly the most politically savvy book out there, and that's what I love about this, is it's a period piece set in, you know, the early 2000s. At this point, we're getting up to 2004, I believe. And, no, actually, part of it's 2001, part of it is
2004.
Yeah. And I like how they kind of shift between some of the time frames, and, you know, the whole thing is a bit of a flashback, too. And doing it set grounded in that time frame, I think, was a smart move, because they can really dive into some of the political fodder for stories. You know, and in that respect, it kind of reminds me of the approach Roy Thomas took for All-Star Squadron, where he was fitting those stories into World War II. And here, it's fitting the story into the political landscape of New York City in this time frame. So it's great stuff. It's well written. Overall, I thought this was just a good issue. but this is also one that I think probably if I were reading it in trades and getting the full arc at once, I'd probably be much happier with. But, you know, I'm getting the stuff monthly.
I didn't have that problem with this issue because it's the nature of the beast when you're reading something that's a multiple part story. Now, I have more of a problem when I'm reading a first issue of a series, be it a mini series with new characters or an ongoing series, where you get that first chapter syndrome where they're not telling you a compelling chunk of story. When it's chapter three of a five-part story or something like that, I am not going to hold it to that standard as a rule because I'm going to assume that that's not a good jumping-on point for a series. You know, usually you don't want to walk in into the middle of a movie or, you know, come in chapter three as your very first exposure. So I'm a lot more willing to take a middle chapter as a middle chapter than when I have a first chapter, which should, as its job, be compelling me to want to read the rest of the story. Whereas if I'm reading chapter three, I'm going to make the assumption that I read chapters one and two, and I'm going to then follow on into chapter four.
Well, and that's fair. That's totally fair. It's just a matter of, for me, you know, I totally enjoyed this, but it didn't have the payoff, you know, satisfaction kind of a thing. Because, again, this is the third chapter of an ongoing story, and it's a good ongoing story. But I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm trying not to penalize the thing for being what it is, and it's very good for what it is. It's just, I don't know, it's hard to articulate what I'm thinking here. You know, it's a middle chapter, and it's a great middle chapter. But, again, it's a middle chapter. That's all I'm saying, I guess.
Yeah, and I took it and I gave it a higher mark than it would on its own standalone. You'll find I did the same thing with Lone Ranger that we'll talk about in a bit. But, I mean, I would give this a 5 out of 5 because I love this series. If I was only looking at this single issue, I'd maybe give it a 4 because it is kind of like a middle chapter. But I look at this as it's Ex Machina, and it's very smartly written. I really liked the opening scene where we actually see where he stops being the great machine. I really, really liked that. You know, some of the scenes with Heartbreaker, the stuff around the Republican National Convention, you get some more Kremlin action, you get some more stuff with the mayor, with the police commissioner, rather. Just a lot of good stuff, and the dialogue in this is part of what I read this for. Brian Vaughn just writes really smart, snappy dialogue. It's well done, and I read this book for the politics, not for the superheroics, although I think we talked about this when we were talking about, you know, what if there were no superheroes, and you had to read, and I pretty much counted this initially as a non-superhero book because I don't even really think of it as a superhero book, even though, you know, he's flying around as the great machine in that first little arc there. I think of this as a political book, although you can make the argument that it is very validly a superhero book because he was a superhero, and you see the superhero appear in many issues in the flashback form. It's just that's incidental to me on my enjoyment of the series.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's very much a political book, and that's really its main strength.
And it's almost unique in that I'm trying to think of what other book is out there that is like that, that is a politically based, that is kind of like political intrigue and around that kind of a subject. And I'm not able to think of one off the top of my head.
I can't think of any that I'm currently reading that would fit that, and I'd be hard pressed to name any that I have read, and that covers a lot more ground, of course, that would fit that. And that's part of what I love about this. I guess for me, I would rank the series as a whole probably at a 5 out of 5. I think this is probably Brian K. Vaughan's best work. It's certainly where, you know, his writing shines, I think, the most because it's so unique, it's so well done, so consistently well done. But I would say for this issue, I can't give it that 5 out of 5. I could easily go with a 4 out of 5. Initially, I'll say I was tempted to go with a 3 out of 5. But I think it was being a little harsh on the series, so definitely the 4. But again, for me, this is one where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, if you will. It's because it's such a rich tapestry. It's such a good narrative universe, is so well developed one. Again, particularly in that political sense, it's very grounded that way. And that's what I'm really loving about this series. You know, any individual issue may not be firing on all cylinders, but again, take them in. This is one that, while there are various good jumping on points, I would say if this is your cup of tea, start at the beginning. You'll get the maximum enjoyment out of it, and it's well worth doing. And this is one of the few titles where I would say, particularly, you know, 38 issues in, it's worth starting at the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there's a really nice hardcover package that they are putting out now.
Yeah.
They're starting to reprint it in hardcover. So I really like this series. I really look forward to it each month. It's near the top of the pile every time it comes out.
Well, and I really like how both Brian K. Vaughan and Tony Harris have been the creative team, you know, since the beginning. I mean, this book would not be the same, obviously, without Brian K. Vaughan, but I would also say without Tony Harris.
I think that is one of the advantages to kind of the creator vision type of stuff in Wildstorm and Vertigo. And I say that as opposed to the house books in Wildstorm, like, you know, the, you know, Midnight or an Authority, that kind of stuff. That stuff and the licensed stuff that they put out, those just, you know, whatever creative team they can slap on them, you know, that's fine. They're just putting out a comic book. This book, Ex Machina, is Brian K. Vaughan and Tony Harris. And it's like 100 Bullets. It's like Why the Last Man, you know, over at Vertigo, where they, I don't think they would do this book if those guys were not doing it.
Well, you know, they may do a book called Ex Machina, but it wouldn't be this book.
I really don't think they would. And I think that's the difference.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you know, like Why the Last Man, they weren't going to do that without Brian K. Vaughan again and Pia Guerra, you know, doing it. And when he was ready to end that story, they ended the story. You know, it's just that was how it was. And I think that's how Ex Machina is. And I can definitely see that he's got a story to tell here, and at some point this is going to end.
Yeah. Well, to me, it kind of reminds me of, and using house properties as an example, of like Sandman and the Jack Knight Starman, where you had such a crystal clear vision creatively that you can't replace the creative team, in that case the writers, in this case I would say both the writer and the artist, to and have the same property. You know what I mean? So you right. Almost, like you said, you have to end this when these guys say they're done.
Right.
And hopefully that's not anytime soon, because this is one I would love to see hit issue 100 or even beyond.
This is really, it joins, it's very comfortable in that pantheon of books like Preacher, like Why, like Transmetropolitan, Sandman,
yeah,
any of those kind of books. This holds right up there. And even when you move into indie books, you know, your Strangers in Paradise, your Cerebus, those kind of things where you have this creative team is doing something just special. And again, it's completely unique as far as I'm concerned in comics.
Well, I would certainly say it's probably the crown jewel of the Wildstorm titles these days.
Yeah. If I had to buy only one Wildstorm title, this would be it. In fact, I don't know, half of them buy one Wildstorm title. But
since you are.
No, I get Storming Paradise. I really like Storming Paradise from Wildstorm also. But, you know, it's exactly because of the mishmash of creative vision, the rotating creative teams, and just not having any kind of clear concept on what the heck they're doing is why I dropped almost all the core Wildstorm titles, which I at one point really enjoyed, the Authority and these things. And it's just they reboot them every year and just they don't know what the heck they're doing with those titles. So I just can't read them anymore. They're all gone.
Well, at some point, I'm going to go through and read all of them because I'm getting them, and I'm behind a reboot or two. And then maybe once I've done that, we may do a roundtable discussion on kind of a, I don't say a post-mortem of Wildstorm, but a, you know, maybe kind of armchair quarterbacking what we think they may have done right and wrong, because I think it's one that at one point, the Wildstorm brand and line of titles really strong right now. Wow. Aside from things like, again, Ex Machina overall, really weak, and mainly the Wildstorm universe itself.
Yeah, well, when you feel like you need to, you know, trundle in a bunch of licensed properties to make the line viable, you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's lessons to be learned from that line.
I'm going to move on to Civil War, House of M, or House of M, Civil War.
It's Civil War, House of M, but I think it should have been House of M, Civil War.
I agree. And you know what? This is the thing here is that if you were expecting some kind of a House of M riff on the Civil War event, that is absolutely not what this is. This is a House of M story, and it's Magneto's rise to power. And I, at least in this first issue, saw no indication or similarity to the Civil War event at Marvel, which, if that's what they're trying to go for, is being evocative of that, they failed miserably in this issue. I think it's not titled appropriately.
I would agree with that. I would also think that this is a timeline that's over and done with. While I'm very interested in enjoying the story and curious about how it kind of got to where it got, it comes down to, do we really need to know what's the point of this?
It's just yet another one of the alternate realities at Marvel, which, you know, multiple universes are alive and well at Marvel. DC isn't doing them very well lately, and Marvel's got a bunch of parallel worlds running along.
I agree with you on they've got a very active multiverse right now. However, for me, in my way of thinking, this isn't one of those parallel realities. This was literally a revamp of the core 616 universe's timeline that flipped back.
Well, I'm kind of thinking that there's a parallel timeline where it didn't flip back, and that's why they keep on trundling out these stories.
Fair enough, fair enough.
It's just this. You know, I like – this is kind of like that Avengers one. Is that what the last one was called?
House of M Avengers, yeah.
Yeah. Same problem that I had with that one is that there are so many choppy cuts between scenes here where they're like covering all kinds of ground. At one point, I got the feeling that it was more of like the cliff notes on a story instead of an actual story itself being told to me.
I see where you're I see your point there, but for me, I mean, particularly in the first couple of pages, they rush through a number of years. But what I respect here that I think is different from the House of M Avengers is we're actually seeing the events unfold. We're not getting captions of, hey, you know, I remember when this happened kind of a thing.
Well, I will give you that.
But I see your point on its cliff notes. It's a rushed version. Flip side, they could have easily done a full issue or two on, you know, Magneto's childhood, you know, all that kind of a stuff, and covered what was in the first four or five pages in the course of two or three issues. I kind of like the fact that they didn't and that we did cover more ground.
Well, I can see why they did it. I mean, it's like, how much of this is the readership going to put up with? We've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's blast through this backstory here so that we can tell something else. So it'll be very telling when you get to the next issue and see if the pace slows down a little bit.
I imagine it has to.
And it doesn't need to get, you know, decompressed or anything, but, you know, at least tell me a whole concept, you know, as opposed to, here's a panel. A whole bunch of
stuff. I mean, the story they're trying to tell is Magneto's rise to power, and what they had to do is get Magneto from childhood to where he's about to rise to power, and that's what this issue is. Now, again, going back to, in my mind, this is a revamped timeline and stuff, hearkening back to the Scarlet Witch's, you know, changing of reality. It confused me a little how some of the events that were different were in Magneto's childhood well before Scarlet Witch ever existed. And while, okay, apparently her reality-altering powers is, you know, knows no bounds, it just seemed a little odd because it could have changed reality such that she didn't exist. If she didn't exist, how could she do it? You know, all that kind of metaphysics crap or whatever you want to call it. The other thing that struck me as a little odd in this is it took a little while to where we got to a more current day-ish time frame. And when we start seeing various mutants and whatnot, and I guess some of this is still maybe 10, 20 years back, I didn't recognize any of them up until, like, the final scene and stuff. And, there was one other that has a major introduction. Obviously, he was recognizable. But aside from Banshee showing up, there weren't really others. I mean, I was expecting this to be a little bit more littered with mutants of years past that would be recognizable here. And maybe they're in here and I just didn't catch them. But you know what I mean?
Well, there really wasn't any other mutant at all in here until...
Until the France scene.
The main one there.
Well, prior to that, when he's the page before the staple, France a year later, we see a couple of mutants there. But they're just mutants du jour, you know, it's...
Right.
They're nobodies.
Oh, yeah.
And again, couldn't there have been anyone that would have fit the bill? And then a little bit after the staple, when we get to the mutant camp, obviously we've got various mutants there. Again, we see Banshee, but a lot of the others, you know, don't seem familiar to me. It's just like they're drawing random mutants, which isn't a problem.
Haven't we seen that Shocker guy somewhere else before? He seemed familiar.
I don't know. His claws look like the Claw.
Yeah, but these look like they're like electrical. They got like little bits of electricity arcing around them, as opposed to Claw is that's sonic.
And maybe he is, and I just don't recognize him, which is entirely possible. My memory is not that great.
Anyway, point is a fair point. I thought it was an okay book. I mean, I'd give it a 3. It was good enough, but I'll read the rest of the series. I wasn't terribly disappointed in it, but it's nothing that blew me away as wow, that was a great book or anything. It was an average, decent story. I would say if you're intrigued by the House of M storyline, if you're a fan of Magneto, this is a good. And the other thing I will point out is, since this is kind of an alternate history take on stuff, I think it's also good for people that have a little bit of an interest in Marvel history, where you can kind of see that historical aspect unfolding. And if you don't have at least a passing knowledge of Marvel Universe history and the backstory of Marvel, picking this book up, I think, is just going to have you scratching your head and going, what?
Yeah. I would agree with all that. Personally,
not for the faint-hearted, let's just say like that, as far as people who understand Marvel and its lore.
Yeah, this is more for the hardcore Marvel fans, particularly those that liked that alternate timeline. And, I mean, I fall into that camp. I would give this a 4. I thought the story was good. I'm not going to say it was brilliant. But, I mean, it was nice, clean, solid art. It was a good first issue that covered, I thought, a lot of ground. Granted, some of it pretty quickly. And I'm really curious where they go with this. I was very happy with it. I'm not going to say it was the best thing I read, but to me, I'm giving it a kind of a pass on not answering the question of, now, why again are you printing this now? Because again, it seems, while I enjoyed it, a little, I don't want to say pointless, but, you know, why are we spending so much time in this reality?
My point, if it doesn't get significantly better by the end, the next House of M miniseries they put out, I am not going to be buying. If it just kind of goes along at this level through the end of the series, this is it for me.
I thought this was a step above House of M Avengers. I do expect this to kind of even out on the pacing and pick up a little with the next issue. But if they do another one of these, regardless of the quality of this, if it's still set in the House of M universe, particularly if they do a World War Hulk one or whatever, I got to stop and think, no, why the hell am I buying these again? I don't want to say this has no payoff long term, but again, this is a timeline that they have already, I don't want to say disavowed, but just, you know, destroyed and unwrote or whatever. Unless we find out it is a parallel reality or what have you. But while it's a good, fun story, I'm sure the same creative team could have told a really cool, really great story set in the real universe. So this goes back to Marvel having a very active multiverse, much more so than DC ever did. Shall we move on to our other book?
Lone Ranger, number 13. If you want to go first,
I'm going to kind of go back to my comments on the Ex Machina in terms of what I think of the book and what I think of the issue. This is one where I am positive this would read better in trade. This is one where, by and large, I really enjoy the series. I wouldn't put it up at a 5, but for the series overall, certainly a 3, probably a 4. However, each individual issue often is so damn decompressed and so leisurely in the pacing of the story that I hit the end of the book thinking, wow, I would have liked a little bit more in there. And this was one of those. It was the second or third part of the story, I forget which, at least the second. And you didn't really need what happened in the first part to understand this, because frankly, other than them having a somebody on them, you know, not just Lone Ranger and Tonto, but a third guy, other than why he's there, I don't feel much happened, or at least don't recall much happening in that previous issue. This, really, they encounter a fire. They put the fire out. There's a scene, kind of an interlude scene, and they get to the town they were riding towards, and that's it. I mean, it is so light on story, it is frustrating.
Nothing happened in this issue. It makes me rethink. I had been thinking, boy, I like this series, but you know, you're right. Each individual issue is so lacking in entertainment value. I mean, I read through this issue and I got to the end and I'm like, man, nothing happened here.
Well, if this is
I give it a 2, and that's only because I like the series as a whole. I mean, as a standalone issue, this was a 1 in my mind.
I can see that. If this was done by, say, DC back in the early 80s, late 70s, this would have been a backup 8-page feature in some other book. And probably told more story than we got in this issue.
Yeah. I don't understand why they felt the need to take up an entire issue with this.
Well, go to the page after the staple. They're setting up a campfire.
Yeah.
That entire page really probably could have been done in that second panel. You know, you keep the caption, you just put all those dialogues onto the one. You know, it's a single panel thing. It's not a full page deal.
It's not even a single panel that needs to go all the way across the page.
Oh, certainly not. You know, certainly not.
It was like an eighth of a page concept stretched out to a page. And, you know, do I need to see on the next – flip the page to the next page?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to see – what is that, about 80% of a page of Lone Ranger holding some clothes that he pulls out of a parcel?
Yeah, that was another gratuitous waste of a page.
I mean, that one's kind of like, gee, I want to have a big sort of slash panel here that I can sell on the original art market. I mean, it's like what?
Well, to me, that's yet another, you know, sixth of a page panel or whatever that goes with that campfire scene page.
Right.
You know,
this entire issue could have been told in 4 pages, maybe 6 at the outside. And then they would have had, you know, 16 to 18 pages to tell some actual plot. And I'm kind of like, why am I buying this comic book monthly? And it doesn't even come out monthly. And it's part of the other problem. This is so chronically plagued with lateness that I barely even remember what happened in the last issue, you know, since the last time I read it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, well, do I really need to be buying this book monthly? Maybe I should just buy the trades, because this is not working for me in the monthly format.
That's fair. That's fair. You bring up a lot of really good points, particularly on how some of this could be condensed. And I think that I was probably being overly generous with my rating of a 3, and I'm going to drop that to a 2, because the few pages where things happen, they're so tangential to this story as to be irrelevant. And again, the rest of this should have taken a fraction of the space it did, and there should have been more content in this issue. This is one that if you're a big Lone Ranger fan, sure, go get it. They're doing some good stuff. But in terms of return on investment for the price you're paying, it is woefully inadequate.
I kind of think back on that term you just said, Lone Ranger fan. And if I was I like the Lone Ranger, but I'm not a huge Lone Ranger fan. the core of the Lone Ranger is, you know, Western action. He's riding around and,
yeah,
you know, he's like righting wrongs and, you know, like any half hour episode of the Lone Ranger that had 10 minutes of commercials told more story than I've seen in the 13 issues to date.
Well, I mean, the whole going back to that TV show, you know, Hi-Ho Silver and the William Tell Overture, this is totally not evocative of that at all. If anything, the background music to a lot of this would almost be elevator music.
Yeah. You know, there's just something with this, and the more I think about it, the more I'm like, you know, it's like, why am I getting this?
This is one where, yeah, they ought to amp up the action. I mean, sure, you could play the William Tell Overture to this, but, man, you would need to slow it down about 10 times to have it, you know, be paced correctly for this story. I expect better out of this, and between the lack of payoff per issue and the infrequency of the issues, I am becoming increasingly disappointed in that series. It's got a lot more potential. They're doing some cool stuff. They're just doing it too damn slow.
Yeah. Okay, you want to go really quick through T-Bird and Throttle number 0?
Yes. This was by Viper Comics. It was something that just looked kind of cool, and I thought this was great. I thought this was a really good intro story, gave the guy's origin, and really kind of set up his current context. And the last, I guess, 3 pages, that reveal, totally didn't see it coming, and I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I agree with you. One thing I will say is I really liked the framing sequence, the kind of flash, both in the art and the story, the kind of flashback in the middle, I thought was a little derivative.
The problem I had with that is he's reading the comic, and it wasn't totally clear to me that's what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, they should have done something with the panel borders or something to make it a bit clearer. It was pages of that comic. But yeah, that was not the highlight of the thing for me. It was exposition.
Yeah. All right. The outside edges of this comic were great, and that's what I'm hoping, my fingers are crossed, that the actual 3-issue series that's coming is by Josh Howard, that it's all by Josh Howard, and that it is evocative of those first couple of pages and the last couple of pages of this issue. And if that's the case, I will be giving extremely high marks to the ongoing series.
I'm assuming that's what the ongoing is going to be.
Yeah. So, fingers crossed. That's all I'm saying, because I really liked that framing sequence.
I thought this was a good use of a 0 issue. You told a full story. It's clearly not going to be the first issue. It covered a lot of ground. It did the exposition that needed to be, but also set the stage for the current context. And it was one that has me hooked. I mean, I can't ask for anything more than that. So what ranking would you give this?
I would give it a 3, mostly because I didn't like the middle part. I am going to fully expect the series itself to be up in the 4 or 5 range based on the strength of the framing sequence here. I mean, and again, I agree with you that I really didn't see that reveal coming, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking to see where they go with it. But given the fact that I really didn't care for the middle 10 or 15 pages of the issue that much, it just pulls the rating down a little bit.
I would say that was not the strong point, and for me, that's what knocked it out of a 5 down to a 4. But I'm really hoping that the first issue knocks it out of the park, and it's something that I can be, you know, an enthusiastic 5 for, because I think it has that potential.
And let's revisit the book when the number 1 issue comes out, because I really want to, you know, see if this holds true, because this could really be an outstanding book. It's got some good potential.
Sounds good to me.
Could have only made it better by having everyone be an ape.
Hey, don't mock me on that.
Mock the apes.
One last thing then before we go, because I hadn't hit stop yet. You could have waited a few seconds and you'd have been clear. I mean, I get that not everyone's liking Marvel Apes. I'm cool with that. It's not a book for everybody. Not everybody's for all books. That's fine. All I ask is anyone who's thinking, wow, you know, I really hated it or didn't like it, whatever, read it not as a comedy book. Ignore the fact that they're all apes and orangutans and monkeys and crap and all the bad puns and stuff. take it as, is it telling a good story? Is it telling the story well? To me, that's where it shines. You know, the fact that, gee, Captain America's a monkey isn't really pulling it up. The fact that it's got the Gibbon, who the hell cares? If you just take it as, is it a good story? For me, that's where it's working. But again, if you guys are hating it, that's cool too. There's tons of other great stuff to be reading. I got no problem with that.
I was in a comic shop in Texas, and I got to see all the Ape covers. I got Zeus Comics, I think it was. That had all the variant Ape covers for $7 to $10 a piece.
Damn.
On the racks. And it's like, I was scratching my head.
I'll admit that drives me bananas.
Yeah.
They don't need to be doing the Ape covers. I'll totally go with that. Okay, so now we're done?
Yep. Join us next week when we discuss All-Star Superman number 12 from DC, Guardians of the Galaxy number 5 from Marvel, and Sword number 11 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.